Hey, Wealth Society. We're back in the Billionaire's Blueprint. And today I'm really excited because we're bringing somebody that not only serves her into her greatness, but she serves a group that I think is underserved. So, hey, you guys, this is Audrey Faust. She is the founder of The Pathway to Prosperity. She has a new book. We can see it in the background. It's called She Grows Rich. We talked about it. It's a great title. And I went online. I got some snippets. I saw the reviews. It is killing it. So, hey, Audrey, welcome.
Thank you. I'm so glad you're here.
Absolutely.
Thanks, Steve. Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah. So, hey, tell me, I always like to hear the origin story. And we spoke before, we talked a little bit about it, but let's fill everybody in. Like, I know you have an MBA, you have an amazing background, but I want to talk about the transition essentially from what you were doing to what you're doing now and the why.
Okay. Awesome. You want me to go way back to the beginning?
You don't have to go all the way back. We can just do the cliff note. I just want people to know.
Sure.
I just want people to know, like, the reason, the light bulb, and why you're in the space and filling that big gap that you fill. Because I think, I mean, not even hyping or over promoting, you're filling a big gap. And I think, so just to kind of cut to the chase, Audrey serves primarily, I think it's just women, right? In the financial space, which Audrey and I had a conversation. You guys all know my wife has a large company where she, you know, empowers women, and the conversations always turn to finance or the lack thereof of financial literacy. And it shouldn't be that way. So kind of once again, speak into how you saw that there was a gap there and why you decided to fill it.
Sure. Well, I mean, the story actually where I saw the gap was me growing up. My mom was in a marriage and not really a particularly happy one. My father suffered from mental illness, and she was financially stuck in that marriage. And it really dawned on me that back then, too, women didn't have as many choices as we do today. I didn't realize that at first growing up, but I did realize, like, I never want to be there. I never want to be stuck in a marriage that I can't financially get out of because of, you know, where my money is, where my wealth is, where my capability to earn is. And even though she programmed this in me all growing up, I still ended up in that position with, I was in my late 20s, I had two young kids, and there I was, not able to make enough to send my children to daycare. I was working odd jobs part-time, and I was right there in a place that she told me not to. I'm still married to the same man for over 30 years now, and not that I was in an unhappy marriage, but I was in this place where she warned me not to be, right? And on top of that, we were, you know, a young family struggling. We were, as a couple, we were only making $24,000 a year. And at that time, we qualified for what was called an earned income credit, which, if you're on the poverty line, the government gives you money back. So that was kind of my eye-opening moment that I was like, how did I get here? Like, this isn't how I was raised. This isn't, you know, where I want to be. So that was the defining moment in my late 20s. I ended up going back to school, getting my degrees and also really educating myself around money and finance. So I knew what I was doing and could now build what I have now today, where I have a net worth of over 2.5 million from nothing, you know, less than 30 years ago. So.
Excellent. I love this. I love the backstories because it gives the framework of what's possible, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's amazing. So tell me about the program itself. So like if I call you and I'm like, I need help. What's the onboarding look like? What's the program look like? Is it custom? Like, what's that actually look like?
So right now I work with women entrepreneurs and they are coming into business in droves, which is amazing. They're three times outpacing men, starting their own businesses. And I worked in accounting and finance for 25 years now. And I saw the need and to really help support women understand the business part of finance, as well as the personal, always comes into it as well. I like to say we get into business because we have a gift, right? And that gift isn't always understanding the financial pieces of our business. Most of the time, other than me, it isn't. And we get thrown under the bus when it comes to that because it's not taught anywhere. It's not taught in school. It's not taught anywhere. Unless you go on to get your MBA or something like that, then you would learn a little bit more about the business finances. But we have to educate ourselves on that. So as far as my programs, I have different programs. I work one-on-one with people where we can get into not only understanding the financial pieces of your business, the money mindset, which really hurts a lot of people, personal and business-wise. And then I also have a course that I created this year called the Profitable Business Academy, where if you want to do it on your own and then still have access to me for questions, that's when you can go and take my course. It's not as high ticket as my coaching. And you have access to it forever. And you have access to me to ask questions as you're going through the course as well.
That's amazing. Being able to serve at multiple levels is so great and necessary, honestly, because everybody, you got to meet people where they're at.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's nice. You've had so many clients at this point. What's the one mistake? I hate to say always or never and use those big, massive words, but what's the one thing when someone comes on that you just know you're going to look at, that you know you're going to be like, okay, let's fix this first?
Gosh, there's so many things.
You know, that's great. Let's give us a list because we don't know our blind spots, right?
Yeah. The first thing that I always dive into is the mindset, the money mindset, because we're often bringing along what we grew up with. Because I have a certification in neuro coaching, and I learned all about the brain and your subconscious in that. And our subconscious is formed before the age 7. So whatever we're around before the age 7 is just going in there like a sponge, right? They say kids are like a sponge. That's why. Because their brain is trying to just grab all this information and thinks it's all true. So if you hear family members saying things like, you know, rich people are bad, greedy, mean, you know, or if they say, one that I had to reprogram was my mom would always say, we work hard for our money. I interpreted that as I have to work hard for money. which AKA turned into workaholic. So, you know, that's another. So another thing. So if you had this mindset of around money and making money, it's going to hinder you before we get into anything else. So that's the first thing we dive into, is making sure that there's no underlying money mindset that's going to like sabotage you along the way, because it will. Because if you think rich people are mean, greedy, selfish, any of that, you're not going to want to make enough money to be rich, because you don't want to be mean, greedy, or any of that. So it'll stop you all along the way. So, and then usually what happens more often than not, especially with women, and is pricing, is setting their price for their business and what goes into that. Like, it's not just for your services. So I mainly work with service-based businesses. So they're looking at themselves and putting a value on themselves, usually lesser than their worth. And they're not looking at the whole picture a lot of times. So where like, okay, well, there's marketing and there's, you know, admin and there's this and there's that. It's not just this, you know, 2 hours or hour, or whatever you spend doing the task. So
it's really easy to undervalue ourselves. That's something that I've looked at a lot, not only because it's the deal that we would want to get and we want to extend that to our, you know, to our clients, our peers, whoever our avatar is, but it's also that the blind spots that you just spoke into, right? Like, if you don't truly know how your business runs and what are the financial pulls, you might actually, like, I know you've seen this, businesses that are breaking even because they don't know the.
Yeah, 70% of businesses actually are break even or losing money, which means only 30% are profitable. So. Yes. And that's probably one, like, you ask the most common thing. One of the most common things that clients come to me with is they're not profitable and they don't know why, and they can't pay themselves enough to support themselves and their families. And after we get through the mindset stuff and the pricing, we also look at the blueprint. And then the blueprint lays out the average of whether we look at 3, 6 or a year, of all of their expenses that are going into their business. And it's kind of like a budget, but I hate the word budget because budgets are constricting. But it's a plan. And it also takes into account taxes and what you want to bring home for yourself out of the business. So we look at all of that and we look at where you are. And I can remember this one girl that one of my clients, Tiffany, was like, when we did this, she was actually in the negative before she even paid herself anything. And she goes, oh, I could see why now. And I'm like, yes. So what we did with her is we actually transitioned her from an hourly rate into a value pricing where she was selling a package. And, you know, it was crazy. She like 10x'd her revenue in a month. It was crazy. Just by doing that, just by understanding the numbers and like where she was at, and she had a team at the time. So her team was getting paid, but she wasn't getting paid. And now she was able to see why, make some adjustments and really move forward with that. So a lot of times it's just getting the clarity of diving into that and understanding how it all comes together and what all the expenses are and all of that.
Well, deciding to not work for free is a powerful decision, right?
But if you're not making a profit and you're not pulling a salary, you are working for free. So, which is sad. Like, nobody wants to work for free.
Yeah. Hey, back to the mindset thing just for a second, because I think it's so important. You know, I've seen studies where like your financial standard is created when you're when you're young, like what you were speaking into.
Yes.
And it's not always your household. A lot of times you're blind to what your household is, but it's the standard that your parents, friends have, or the houses that you're going over to, you know, to play at. And so that's, you know, something to keep in mind as well. Above and beyond that, though, the subconscious is such a powerful thing. How do you handle that when you have women that come to you that are, self-worth issues, financial issues, and you know that it's subconscious and you have to hit the reset button? What's that look like as far as working with you?
Great question. So first we identify it, right? Let's figure out, you know, what's holding you back, what's in there. I had one client, Shayna, who her trigger was she thought, God, I'm trying to remember her exact word, greedy. Yeah, that's what it was. Rich people were greedy. And she didn't even know it was in there. And I have questions that I ask, rich people are fill in the blank, right? But you have to answer it real quick because that's what's in your subconscious. You can't think about it. Once you think about it, you go into your conscious. It's like word association. First word that comes to mind. I want to ask you these questions.
So if we're going to be truthful, we have to answer fast.
Yes. Yes. Because that's what you want to know, what's in your subconscious, because then you can change it. Actually, inside my free gift, I have an audio that teaches you how, gives you the questions and also tells you how to reprogram it. So how you reprogram it then is first you're going to find evidence of the opposite. So I asked Shayna, so is that true? Like, are all the rich people you know greedy? And she was like, no, my best friend's very rich. And he's like one of the most generous people I know. So, I mean, that's how but growing up, that's what she was around. So that was in her subconscious that she was constantly, you know, in need of money because she didn't want to be rich, because she thought they were greedy. So finding evidence to prove your brain wrong, even if you don't know anybody, you can think of, as far as rich people are, you can think of people in the media that are generous and are giving and are, you know, of course you can find the opposite of that, but that's not what you want to find. You want to find people that are giving, right? And then you put that on autopilot. So I like to say, see it, say it, write it 3 times a day for the next 2 to 3 months. So that's going to create new neural pathways in your brain. So you can then get rid of that old belief and you're not going to believe it anymore. And the problem is the subconscious runs in the background and we have 80,000 thoughts per day. 95% of them are from our subconscious and we don't even know what they are because it's just running on autopilot. So.
Man, I love that you are the full package as far as, you know, like, I need help with my QuickBooks and, you know, accounting platforms. And I, you know, I'm not recognizing some of these numbers, where they're coming from, and the level of support that you bring with the mindset is a really nicely woven together package. So yeah, absolutely. No, it's like, there's some people that have their expertise and you might get, you know, you could be with a performance coach and they're prodding you and pushing you and you get no support on the actual business because honestly, they don't know business. They know how to create high achieving business people, high achieving athletes. So to have both is really, really valuable.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Okay, so back to, we kind of got into the mindset stuff. We were on common mistakes, and you'd hit one so far. What are other common mistakes like that you just know are going to be there when you're onboarding someone?
Common mistakes. It's more around like not, I'm more around education than, I can think of one, a common mistake is actually mixing your personal and business. So,
oh yeah.
A lot of people, that most people these days create an LLC for their business. And the reason you create an LLC for your business is to protect your personal. Then they commingle all their personal stuff in with their business, which actually nullifies the LLC. And not only does it do that, you also don't get real numbers to understand if your business is actually profitable and what kind of profit it's making. So you can make decisions based on that. So, more often than not, like people are taught, well, I'm just going to throw everything in my business because then I don't have to pay any taxes. And then you have no profit. And then, you know, but, you know, it's, you want, you and I had this discussion too. Then you go for a loan with no profit and nobody's going to give you any money, right? So there's like so many things that, are challenged with that. People have such a bad negative connotation around paying taxes. But if you have a job, you're paying taxes, you know, you don't have a choice about it. So you should kind of look at your net profit of your business, if you're not an S corp and pulling a paycheck, as your salary, right? That's your money that you then get to pay taxes on. And there are ways around taxes, like changing once your profit gets high enough, changing to an S corp where you can get some tax benefits there. But if you never show any profit, that's the other thing too. The IRS can come back at you and tell you you have a hobby if you don't show a profit in 3 years. And what happens then is all your deductions for the last 3 years are ineligible, and you have to pay tax on all the income with no deductions. So
no, that's real. My
that's a lot.
Yeah, no, I've been through a few audits, but my very first one, I was running a fund and I had a small ranch, which was real, but the IRS didn't think it was real because it's a massive red flag, and we had to play the whole game of making sure that there's not cross-pollination. And and also I was scared to death. And I also realized that it's not scary. Like, you literally just engage the agents and you talk to them and you tell them what's going on. Like, it's one of those things, like, until you experience it, you're worried about it. Not that bad.
Yeah. As long as what you're doing is legit.
Well, that's right. But then those people, the guilty people know they're guilty.
You're right.
Those guys need to be afraid.
Yeah.
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 Okay. Let's dive into the book for a minute.
Sure.
What set expectations as far as, you know, once again, was this something that was just bubbling out of you? You needed to write it. What's in there? Set the expectation if you could, please.
So the book is on personal finance and how my story that I shared with you in the beginning of that $24,000 year up to, you know, building my wealth as I did up to multi-millions, and how I did it. So it's my story built in with how to, right? How to Become a Financial Powerhouse is the subtitle. And there's also stories of other women that I worked with when I was doing personal financial coaching rather than business, of how they use the tools and techniques and that I teach as well inside the book and how it worked for them. And it's, you know, it's like a handbook, basically, of all, each chapter is a different tool you can use. I talked about the plan that I build with businesses. One of the chapters is a plan. I teach you how to build a plan personal with your personal. Also, the money mindset chapter. There's a money mindset chapter all around reprogramming your subconscious and those questions and so forth. It's also creating a relationship with money, right? Because people think that, you know, they have either this fear around money or this, I don't know, love-hate relationship with money, right? So there's a chapter around that. There's a chapter around how to invest, which is so, so important. Because I believe that I've invested on my own from an article I read in Money Magazine back in my 20s. And I started with just $50 a month and invested in mutual funds. And that is definitely what started me off in building what I have today, was that simple article of how to. I didn't even know what a mutual fund was back then. I was just like, I don't know. I'm just following these directions. And this couple on the magazine, they had, what was it? They put $100 a month away for 20 years and came out with $100,000. Well, back then, man, I thought that was like rent winning the lottery, right? It's like, oh, I want to do this. I got to get this magazine article and figure out how to do this. And, you know, they invested what was called a mutual fund. And I just said, well, I don't have $100 a month right now, but I have 50. And I started with 50. And, you know, that's where my journey began. So I wanted to pay it forward too. So I have a whole chapter in there on how to invest, starting in mutual funds. There's also a chapter in there, like, we're all different people. And we, if you're familiar with the DISC leadership tool, D-I-S-C, there, I relate the DISC to money and how different personality or different behaviors, it's not even personalities, different, how people behave differently around money and ways to combat that, because we're all different. And we're all, you know, so yeah, so there's a lot of great things in there. And thanks for checking out the reviews and stuff. It's been doing really well. Amazon bestseller is first day out. And it's already sold less than a month. It sold, I haven't checked recently, but my January numbers came in mid-February, and it was over 1,000 copies. Nice. So I was excited.
Yeah, no, that's going to do well. So you touched on assets for a second, and this is something that we spoke about earlier too. You know, with my clients, I always see they have a good income and they pay taxes. But as far as like the four pillars of wealth, they completely forget about the middle. Like they don't know their asset classes, and or they only know one because, you know, they're afraid of the others, or they just haven't gotten there yet and they have no idea what they can do with credit. But as far as the assets go, you touched on, you know, being in the market. Can you tell me some of your favorite asset classes that you like? I know you're playing with some real estate. It sounds like you're still in the market. Are you S&P? Like what's your asset classes look like? And obviously we're not financial planners. We're just talking about what we do. So, you know, disclaimer, but I do like to know, I do like to know what people are doing, because that's kind of, you're teaching your story.
Yeah. So I started with a mutual fund, and then, that's what led me to, then I had a pocket of money, right, at some point, and said, well, I can remember my husband and I were first married too, and we thought, wouldn't it be fun to have a second home in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina? And we were living in Pennsylvania at the time. At that time, I think I was pregnant with my first child. We were in our 20s. We did have our own home at that time. But we went into a real estate agent, and the real estate agent practically laughed us out of the office because they were like, well, do you have 20% down? We looked at each other like, no. We just like left. You know, it was like, I didn't know at that, you know, we didn't know. We just thought, oh, we'll get another house and we'll rent it out and it'll pay for itself, right? That was our grand idea, but we didn't realize at the time we had to have 20% down. So in order to do that, fast forward, when the market crashed in 2008, we had some money because we'd been saving all along. And we bought a house at a really low price in Myrtle Beach, and we were able to rent that out for 10 years and double our money with a 20% down payment. Plus, it paid for itself the whole year. So I don't really get into the real estate too much in the book because I thought that's almost like a whole book in itself. But that is another way that you know, we grew our wealth. That was a full-time rental. We had a VRBO, or Vrbo, I guess they're calling it now, rental in the Poconos then. That was 2008. We bought that house in Myrtle Beach. We got a real estate rental company. They had it rented out literally in 3 weeks. It was crazy. It was a full-time rental because of the place we were living. It only allowed full-time rentals, which was fine because it was like, oh, this is going to be a retirement house for us. And I think the entire 10 years that we had that property, it was only not rented 2 weeks, which is crazy. It paid for itself every single year. The last, I'd say, 3 or 4 years, there was a little bit of cash surplus. Then we sold it 10 years later when we decided that's not where we want to retire. We want to retire in Florida. And it had doubled in its value. So if you think about it, we only put 20%, which was, I think it was $130,000 or something like that, property. We only put 20% of that down. And that 20% like made 130 plus, you know, plus in 10 years. So that was a great investment.
Yep.
And it paid for itself. So, but we couldn't have even done that had we not been putting a little bit of money away all along. So we had that 20%. But yeah. And then we had a VRBO rental, in the Poconos, Pennsylvania, that was vacation rental. And again, that paid for itself, you know, every single year. And we ended up selling that. But, you know, there's a lot of different ways. Now, I didn't dabble in stocks too much just because I think that takes a lot of watching and educating and really paying attention. It was a little too high risk for me versus mutual funds. All right, we have these people who know what they're doing that are creating these funds, and they're just going to kind of go along as the market does, which was a little more comfortable for me.
Yeah. It's a safe place to park money. The real estate stuff I like so much because when you really dig into it, you're leveraged, but you're leveraged in such a safe asset. For the most part, you know, 2008 does happen, you know, every 20 years, 50 years,
yeah.
Pick a number. But if you don't get out of it, you know, if you can stay in, you're good. You know, 2008 was painful, but it was also temporary.
Yes.
And it created opportunity as well. Yeah. What are your thoughts when your people come to you about leverage and, you know, startup loans, capital? What's that look like as far as how you advise your people?
I don't believe that debt is bad. I think I have a chapter in my book, actually, that talks about the 7% rule. So if the interest rate is 7% or above, it might make sense, not in business, but in personal, to pay it off sooner. If it's below, like, invest your money instead. And actually, I have a whole calculator tool inside the portal that you get with the book where I show you how that is so beneficial. I know we're talking business, but I flipped to personal. So,
well, it's like we spoke yesterday, though. It's so interwoven. Like, we get to talk about both because they touch and they rub, and they, if just like you spoke into, if we're not careful, they can completely cross-pollinate.
Yes.
We get to be really intentional about what that looks like, and also have an awareness that, you know, even though we have these entities, we can control them and point them and direct them.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think there are ways you can get, like, low interest, either credit cards or loans when you're starting out, to help leverage starting your business out. But you just got to be careful that you don't end up, like, you know, you get a 0% interest credit card for 12 months. And then in that 12 months, you're so far in debt, you're now paying 25% instead of zero. So being strategic with using credit.
Yeah, the stewardship is incredibly important, and planning. This is something that we touch on a lot with my programs, is making sure that you have that margin of error. Because if you have a 12-month, like, let's say, you know, you stack some credit cards and you run out of time, you have to have a plan for the now what.
Yeah.
And that's where, honestly, if you have a credit card, whether you know it or not, you have a bank relationship. And with that relationship, what I get my people to plan for is to get, you know, 6 months into a 12-month card, get a credit line established. And it might be a higher rate than you want, but it's not going to be credit card debt. You know, at the most, it's going to be 10%. It's probably going to be 7 or 8 at, you know, today's rate, 2025, for people that are listening. But it gives you a place to move that money to. You know, it's the backup plan. And for some businesses, you know, it becomes their main plan. Like, credit lines can run a whole company if they're done properly.
Yes. And, you know, being strategic about it, you know, depending on the size of your business, if you have payroll, I always suggest that you have a line of credit, because you can't not pay your people. Or if you have, you know, subcontractors that you depend on a regular basis. So if cash flow becomes an issue, you know, like I said, you can't not pay your people. So they're not going to work for you anymore if you don't pay them. So I always advise having a line of credit. I always advise getting the line of credit even when you don't need it or you don't think you will need it. And the best time to get any kind of credit is when you don't need it. That's when banks want to give it to you. So
that's exactly right. We get to plan ahead.
Yes. Yeah. And even if you, like you said, even if you don't use it, I totally agree. You're building your business credit. So at some point, if you do need credit, you're going to be able to use that or get additional credit. I think that our society has built such a bad reputation around credit, and people think credit is bad and having debt is bad. As long as you don't get yourself upside down where you owe more than you have, like, it's not bad. And as long as you're not paying 20%, you know, interest rates, it's not bad.
Well, it's great on the tax side as well.
Yes. Right. So you get to deduct that interest. That's why when I have that 7% rule, it doesn't take into account tax taxes. It's more like 10 if you're taking into account taxes and you're looking at a business, because you now get that interest deduction.
Yeah. I would rather pay a tax, or, you know, I'd rather pay a loan rate of, you know, 10% and under than, you know, I'm in California. So, you know, it's easy to throw those numbers around. Yeah. 43%. That's it's kind of a no brainer, right?
Right. Right. Definitely.
Crazy. There was something you touched on I wanted to go back to, is what is money? And it's something, it's so interesting, because like we can dive in and be like, oh, you know, we have a fiat currency and like really dive into to that side of it. But I was told something when I was younger, and it made so much sense, and it really set a framework for holding my value, is that money is just your stored time and energy. And that was something that served me so well, because then you're like, okay, well, if I'm going to put time and energy into this, what is my ROI? And it's super simple. And I think everyone has a subconscious awareness of that. Like most people are like, tell me that, but are you practicing it?
Right. Yes. Yeah. I always say money is a tool, but that's similar, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a tool we get to use. That's all. And a lot of people put a lot of emotion around money. Which it is emotional, right? But it's only emotional if we make it emotional.
That's right. And that's part of the mindset, as far as compartmentalizing that stuff and making sure that you're making data-backed, logic-backed decisions, as opposed to the emotional just pick. And then,
right,
you know, did you pick right emotionally, or did you use data and numbers to back up your decisions? Because that's one of the most important things. And I'm going off of what you're sharing with me yesterday. It's incredibly important to keep, in your case, your women safe and secure and moving forward in business.
Absolutely. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And if you're not, you don't know what your numbers are, if you're not, you know, I like to call it, so at the end result of the blueprints that I help women create is what I call your monthly nut. So it's how much you need to make in your business every single month to support you, your taxes, your business expenses. And you should know that number. You should know that number off the top of your head that says, okay, when I hit, you know, $15,000 in revenue, I've hit my nut. I'm good. You know, and the rest is gravy. So I've worked with multi seven-figure businesses. And when I worked in my CFO work, and like they always knew that. Like I always had made sure they calculated that. They knew that. They knew, okay, I need $300,000 per month if I want to break even. Anything over that is going to be a profit. Anything under that, it's going to be a loss. They could spout that off. And it was ever changing because they're always adding employees and things like that.
That's the nugget.
Know that number.
That's the nugget. Yeah. That's the nugget right there, everybody. And not only to know that number, but to realize that it's not last year's number. Because now you've got three more employees.
Yeah.
You just added another $30 product that you're paying for monthly, like whatever level you're at.
Exactly.
That's the nugget. Thanks for that, Audrey. That's strong. Wait, we're almost out of time, but I wanted to touch back on, you mentioned it, but your free gift. Because I think it's powerful. So unpack that for us real quick. And then we'll wrap up.
Sure. So it's called 12 Secrets from an Expert CFO Profit Accelerator Workbook. So it's a workbook you can go through. It's not too overly, expansive, but it will walk you through 12 things. First thing, as I mentioned, being the money mindset. And this is all the things that I walk my clients through and we do on a more detailed level. But I put it all in this workbook for anybody that wants to go through it on their own and just like things they need to look at in their business and make decisions on that I've learned through my 25 plus years experience being in the accounting and finance world. And just to really start understanding your numbers and start understanding your mindset and start knowing, like, am I even doing the right things? You know, sometimes you don't even know the right questions to ask, right? So you don't know what you don't know.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Just creating awareness is one of my favorite things.
Yes, yes.
Amazing. All right. Well, hey, Audrey, thanks for being here. I really appreciate your time. Once again, I appreciate what you do and who you do it for.
Yeah.
Just because of my come from. But yeah, that's it.
Awesome. Thank you, Steve. I enjoyed being here.
Absolutely. Okay, you guys, we'll see you next time. Take care.